I'm an addict named Steve. Sorry, I was in the parking lot with the cool kids doing some drugs. Thanks to the committee, Robbie, everyone that asked me to come up. It's truly a beautiful feeling up here. Therapeutic value, one addict helping another is without parallel. And then when we get a whole bunch of us together, there's this super parallel kind of matrix mathematic thing that happens. And it's called I'm Okay for Today. I want to have a moment of silence for somebody from this area that we lost. I've never met the man, but from what I hear, he contributed a tremendous amount of love and hope to this area. His name is Luke W., and I'd like to have a moment of silence to recognize him. Thank you. The guy with one day clean, where are you? Where'd he go? Who has one day? Hello, what is your name? Ian, we just met, right?
Yeah.
Ian, I want you to know that you never have to use again, even if you want to. Even if that voice in your head that sounds exactly like you tells you that you have no choice, you absolutely never have to use again. Welcome home. If you're new here, welcome. If you're not new, even more welcome, because we need you. Because there's an influx of people coming in from the streets right now that need to hear that it's possible to live a new way of life. The message that this fellowship carries is that an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. And that last part is particularly important. What I attribute to a new way to live is learning how to take the principles that we learn contained in the steps and learning how to practice them in all our affairs. I want to extend a special thanks to Dennis for reminding me of what I could be when I grow up, should I continue to do the work on myself. You're an inspiration and you are a powerful predecessor. I owe my life to you and people like you. My name is Steve. I'm from Greenbelt, Maryland. It's this little shithole right outside of Washington, D.C., right inside the Capitol Beltway. We smoke a lot of PCP there and take our clothes off and try to stop fire trucks with our bare hands. And yeah, that's where I'm from. I used to be from D.C., and then even before that, I was from New York City. But my origin has changed the more steps that I work. I gradually get more honest about where I'm from. In my fourth step, after I did it, I came clean to a room of people I had grew up with and went to elementary and middle school with. I came out and told them that I wasn't from New York, and I admitted it. And that was a great moment for me. But, I mean, I'm going to start at the beginning, and I'm going to spend the next, you know, two-thirds of the meeting talking about the drugs that I use and all of those things. And we can spend a lot of time hearing about how hard it is out there, and I can even give you step-by-step instructions on how to use. Or we can talk about the solution. I do not have a drug problem. I've never had a drug problem. I don't believe in drug problems. I've had problems because of drugs, like abscesses and federal indictments. In conversations with that same ER doctor one more time about we might have to really take the arm off this time. We're not sure if that infection's gonna go away. I learned what things like necrotic tissue mean. They're all problems because of drugs. The reason I'm able to say that, and people from outside and maybe even inside the rooms here might not agree with that, but my experience has shown, because that's all I can talk about, right? My experience has shown that if the drugs were my problem, then when the drugs left, my problem should have gone away. I found quickly after the drugs left that my problems became much more apparent with every hour, every day that I stayed clean. I saw what my problems were really made of. When I was a kid, I got a call, 6 years old, I got a call from my mom and dad. And my dad called me Bubba at the time. And he said, Bubba, we need you to come downstairs. So I started, it was this townhouse on Buchanan Drive in Virginia Beach, Virginia. I'm trying to be really specific about where I come from. Forget the zip code. But I was going down the stairs and I remembered this feeling that was growing with every stair that I went down. I remember the feeling that I was getting inside of me. And it was fear. It was this mounting fear. It was this feeling of impending doom. I didn't know what was at the bottom of those stairs, but by the time I got to the last one, I knew that I didn't want to be in that room. And so I went to the couch, and I took my mom's coat, and I laid on the couch, and I put the coat over me like a protective bubble. Now, I don't remember the dialogue that was in what they said. I don't remember the words that they used, or the expressions or the tonality of their voice. But based on the feeling that I do remember, I imagine that they said something to the effect of, Bubba, everything you know about love, safety, security, home, family is over with. Dad's going this way and mom's going that way. And that was all I needed to know. I had my father, rest his soul. This big foreboding man with the big beard, and it was 1990, so we had those glasses from that era with the Dennis, what are they called? Fucking the Coke bottles, there we go, with the tints. Thank you, whoever that was. And and then we had my mom, who was not that. She was this, and she was the timid love, affection giver, and dad was the protector. And so I didn't need to stay for any more of that meeting. I left, and I went upstairs to my room. And I took my Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle backpack, and I put my Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle underwear in it. And Rat King, and Leonardo, and Donatello, and Splinter, they all went in the bag. I stopped at the bathroom and looked at my Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle toothbrush, but I said, since I'm going with Dad, I don't need to bring that, because he never makes me brush my teeth. So I left it there. And I ran downstairs, and I heard my dad start the van in the driveway. It was a big black 18 van with a circular window in the top left corner in the back. And I heard him start the van. And I ran, and like I said, it was 1990. We didn't have power windows yet. So if you had power windows in 1990, you are richer than me. I just want, in case you're in your head like, yeah, we did. All right, cool. You come from a way better upbringing than me. But I went to the passenger side of the van, and I remember him leaning over and rolling the window down gradually. And he didn't say a word, and I didn't say a word either, but I took the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle backpack, and I threw it into the window of the van. And he put the van in reverse, and he threw the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle backpack back out the window. And he pulled off. That's the first time that I can identify in my story ever hearing what we refer to as the disease of addiction speaking to me. And it was just a whisper. It was just this little soft suggestion. What if you're not as lovable as you thought you were? What if he has more important things to do than tell you that he loves you? That report card should have been better than it was, otherwise this wouldn't have happened. Who's going to protect you? You? You're a coward. And it started as a whisper. The thing was that where I lived, you couldn't get social service benefits if there were two parents in the household. And my dad lost his job. and he had to leave so that we could eat. I didn't know that shit. I thought he just opted to leave. So, single parent household, it became. We lost the house, and we were members of another fellowship, and the people from that house that we would go to every Sunday morning passed us around month to month, and we would stay in one family's home and then another family's home. And it was easy for a six, almost seven-year-old child at that point to develop a sense of not fitting in when he lived in a different place every month, his transitory lifestyle, never being able to grow any roots or hang a poster of Leonardo on his wall. In the second grade, I took this test called the Career Aptitude Test. And now, at this point in my life, I was convinced that if I made enough noise, that my father, wherever the hell he was, would realize it was a mistake to leave, and I would get his attention, and he would come back. So I had these grandiose plans. I was going to be this, and I was going to be that. Then he'd see. Then he'd come back, and he would admit that he made a mistake, and I'd forgive him because that's my daddy, and I love him. And I took this test. So the test is the Scantron thing, and it's all these little bubbles. And it's these arbitrary questions, random questions, where you fill in a dot with the number two pencil, like 30 questions. And then at the end of it, you put it in this machine in the front of the classroom, and on the other side, they print out this report, what your destiny is. This is what you are meant to be in life. Much to my dismay, after I got the piece of paper, the teacher had us come up front and read these things. I was number three in line. The girl went. First girl. Prosecution attorney. She had this really like proud look on her face. And I had yet to develop a hatred for lawyers at that time in my life. So I just gave her a thumbs up. Second guy went, it's like some kind of super specific thing, I forget, but it was something to the effect of pediatric neurosurgeon or something really, like you couldn't just say, I remember in my head being like, can't you just say doctor? Like why did you have to get all specific? I'm like, how the hell does this thing know that? 30 questions and docs. So I got up there and I said, my name is Steve. It wasn't my name is Steve, I'm an addict yet. My name is Steve. And according to this piece of paper, my destiny is to become a tractor driver. I am not mistaken on where I am right now. I'm in the middle of the country. I don't have a cell phone signal. I'm kind of feeling some measure of digital dope sick because of that. But I do want to say before I continue with the story that if you are indeed a tractor operator, hold on till the end of this story, and I will demonstrate my value for you. It's no offense. At that point in my life, a tractor wasn't going to make enough noise to get my dad back. Only the combination of being a ninja during the week and a rock star on the weekends was going to make enough noise to get him back. And at that time in my day, that was the only goal that I had. Humiliation. Yeah. And I promised myself I'd never feel that way again. Don't worry. I know I started with the first grade and second grade. We're going to skip past all of that. We're going to go fast forward about 17 years later. I had been convicted for crimes that I had only heard about in movies. And I was on one of those awesome buses, kind of like the van that my dad drove, but it was white and it had a logo on the side. And I was driving through the country. I got to be a part of that special squad where they like to take you out into the middle of nowhere, kind of like here. And
leave you there for 6 to 9 months, minimum.
And I remember looking out the window, and it was just cornfield after cornfield after cornfield after cornfield, 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 and it was this endless blur of corn. And then I looked up, and there was this clearing. And when I looked out, and I looked out in the clearing, I saw a man on a John Deere. He was driving his tractor around this field, and that moment was very significant for me. I had forgotten all about the career aptitude tests. I had forgotten all about ninjas and rock stars and all those other things. But in that moment, I remembered, and everything in my head stopped spinning. And a voice that I now identify as the God of my understanding said, "How did it come to this?" When I was in the second grade, the last thing on earth I ever wanted to be was a tractor driver. In the short time span of 17 measly years, I came to a point in my life where I would have set everything I had ever loved on fire to be that guy that day, pushing that tractor around that field. I didn't want to be a tractor driver when I was in the second grade. But what didn't come out of that test was, junkie thief, piece of S-H-I-T, criminal, failure, disappointment, absent, miscreant, deviant, all the other words that I could think of. None of those things came out of that test, but somehow that's what I had become. I had become someone that stands in front of a federal grand jury with a dirty t-shirt on purpose and told them that I didn't dress up today because I don't dress like a guilty man while representing myself against a kidnapping charge. At that point in my life, I made it through the first week of the seventh grade in public school. And then I got transferred to a place called Boys Village in Cheltenham, Maryland, where I went for a couple semesters and psych ward here. You know, everything that our literature talks about. When at the end of the road, we find we can no longer function as a human being, dot, dot, dot. That had already been my story since, you know, I was 13 years old. Every single place that I had ever been in had this boring ass person that would come in every Wednesday night, and they would call us all in there, and they'd make us sit down, and they'd come in there with these colored pieces of paper, and they'd introduce themselves as addicts, and they would tell these boring ass stories about how awesome life was, all the cool stuff they used to do that they don't do anymore because they were cowards, how they were quitters. Sometimes I would raise my hand and join in and tell them I wasn't impressed. And then I would go back to my cell or my padded room or my dormitory or whatever the hell it was. And then the pain got great enough. I was 26 years old. It took me 26 years to beat the hell out of myself. Thank God for heroin and cocaine. I usually don't even talk about the things that I use, but thank God for them. Because they beat the brakes off of me quick enough for me to get this and have a shot at life before I was 60 years old or dead. So thank God for them. They're at the top of my gratitude list regularly. I was 26 years old. I was coming off of a federal sentence. And the federal government gave me 7 days to come off of
180 milligrams of methadone.
That they had been giving me because I convinced them I needed it.
This guy came in and I was like, here we go again. These boring ass people keep showing up everywhere I end up. I don't want to hear it.
The first step of our program talks about when we were beaten, we became willing. I heard him talk about how he was jealous of his criminal uncle at the dinner table when he was a kid, because he would get locked up and his whole family would swarm around him and give him all this attention and care, and they would go to the police station and they would raise hell and they would fight together in unison to try to rescue him from the evil clutches of law enforcement. And he was jealous of that, and that's all I heard. And I had a seizure and I ripped a muscle in my back and they carried me out. I got out. I went to a meeting and I raised my hand. And some guy asked me to close the meeting afterward, you know, in the circle, God. My name is Steve, I'm an addict. I said, yo, we rose when you told us we couldn't, and stood our ground, look around, you can follow it. I dropped 60 bars in the circle. This is how you say sick addict in sign language. Sick addict. What it really was that I knew it was only a matter of time before you guys told me that when you said keep coming back, you weren't talking to me. And I wanted to get it out of the way. So I was behaving in ways to encourage you to kick me the hell out. Let's do it. I stayed clean for 59 days. And on day 60, I had to go to court. And finally face sentencing. After 20 months in a federal trial thing. Raised my hand. I said, my name's Steve, I'm an addict. And they were all like, shit, here we go. Somebody play a beat. And I said, you guys saved my life. I'm going to prison for a very long time tomorrow, but I'm free, and I'm not afraid. This guy came up to me after the meeting, and he said, what time is court tomorrow? And I said, whoa. Not interested, bro. And I mean, it's funny now, but the truth is that I haven't recently come from way of life, where people did things for each other without strings attached. I remember the first time I thought I had a friend after all the chaos in my life started. He came to me in a bullpen in Boys Village. He was from Baltimore. And he came to me and he said, I'm going to try it. He's like, yo, what's up? Yo, you all right? Yo, you want a fog, yo? They call cigarettes fugs in Baltimore. I'm not sure why. But I didn't even know what a fug was, but I said yes. And he gave me one Newport 100, a piece of a Striker off of a pack of matches in one single match. And I was like, he's like, where are you from? And I said, Greenbelt. Now, I don't know if anyone's ever been to Baltimore, but there's this street in Baltimore called Greenmount Avenue. It's a very, very treacherous street. If you survived growing up there, then you obviously have some kind of street cred. This guy thought I said Greenmount when I said Greenbelt. So instantly, I didn't know that at the time, but when I said Greenbelt, he was like, oh, shit. And I was like, that's right. That's right. Yes, I'll take one of those fugs that you speak of. I thought I had a friend. I thought I had some respect, some street cred. I was impressed with my town. I had no idea how notorious we were. Until he came for payment 3 days later in my cell. So when this guy approached me and I'm in a new place and he posed himself as somebody that wanted to do me a favor by giving me a ride to court, I'm not interested. I remember how this story ends. And then this little thing flickered inside of me. I also didn't have a ride to court. Uber wasn't invented yet. So I got clean before Uber. That feels good to say. I got clean before Uber. Before bath salts. K2. So I said, okay. So he picked me up. And we're in his pickup truck and we're driving. We make it all the way to the courthouse with no incident. And I'm in my head like, bro, you should have made your move. I'm not coming out. There's not going to be a way back. You miss your opportunity. So we walked into the courtroom, and this prosecutor, I had put her through hell for 20 months, and it actually kind of worked. Remember, I'm representing myself in this case. And I was bringing all kinds. They were like, why can't we get you to give a urine specimen? And so I did all this research on the internet about how methadone and opioids make it hard for your kidneys to function. And blah, and I made up a whole bunch of crap that sounded good about renal failure, and that's why I can't pee. And then they put something on me called a sweat patch, where it's this thing where they affix it to your skin for a week, and then they take it and put it in the lab. And if you get a sweat patch, you really graduated in the criminal system or the lying system, one of those two. But she walked, like if that was the courtroom and I was the judge, she walked straight at me, looked at me for 2 seconds, walked to the guy that came with me. Now this guy, country white boy covered in head to toe with tattoos, she grabbed him and pulled him into the ante room in the entrance to the courtroom, you know, the little conference rooms on the side. Pulled him in there and shut the door. In my head, I was like, all right, federal government, you're so tired of me that you planted a federal agent inside of Narcotics Anonymous to make sure that I got to court under no surveillance at any time. Haven't you read our traditions, FBI? That was illegal. She came out of that room with him and walked right to the front and called my case first and dismissed the entire thing after 20 months. After some of the most egregious charges that you can acquire as a human being. The whole thing. The story is, that she pulled him in that room and she said, are you from Narcotics Anonymous? And he said, yes, ma'am. And she said, my son was one of you. He had 3 years clean. He celebrated 3 years and we found him blue in the bathroom the next day. I've been trying to get Mr. Hall to go to you guys for a year and a half. We tried everything that we could think of to help him. Thank God you found him. I'm gonna give him another shot. See, the thing that I wasn't paying attention to was, sure, I got clean and I got zestfully clean. I started taking showers. You know, I did that whole thing with the multicolored Tim's and the Chantal, that shit, you know. And, I was going to meetings, people were pulling tags off of my clothes, you know, because I was in that much of a hurry to get there and look good. That the thing that I didn't notice that it improved about me aesthetically was that I wasn't looking at a 45 degree angle permanently anymore. Somewhere between age 13 and 26, I learned that the right way to walk through the world was by looking at the ground. And I walked in there with my head up because I had surrendered to the process and I was ready to accept the consequences of all the things that I had done. So she walked to the front of the room and she dismissed the entire case. That man's been my sponsor since that day. His name is James C. He's from Southern Maryland, and he keeps it so simple because that's exactly what I need. But he's been my sponsor since that day. Let me tell you something, newcomer, or anybody. If you get arrested for the kind of shit I got arrested for, and you're up against that kind of heavyweight stuff, and somebody comes in your life and just gets it all magically dismissed, don't let them go. Keep them. They're lucky. They're some kind of magical legal elf, and you don't let them go. And that's it. That's my using story. That's the chaos. And those are all those things. You know why we're not interested in what or how much you use or who your connections were or what you've done in your past, how much, how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help? You know why that last piece is important? Because that's the spirit of anonymity. That is the great equalizer. The feelings that we all feel and we all share. Those are the things that make us alike. And all those things that we tell you we don't care about are the things that separate us. They are the things that people compare out upon and die for. Oh, you're a lawyer, and I don't like you guys. Peace, Narcotics Anonymous. I'm not messing with you. Nobody cares. Nobody cares about that. You want to know what I do for a living? Obviously, I am a exotic dancer. Ask me afterwards if that's all you want to talk about. Those things don't matter because they're going to separate me from you. We might not have gone to the same college or studied the same things, read the same books, worked, gotten paid by the same people, but I am willing to bet that every single person in this room knows what it's like to be afraid, knows what it's like to be desperate, wondering if that their life had gotten to the best it would ever be, and if it's only a series of shitty-ass mistakes from this point forward. We can connect on that level, so let's go. The program. How it works. If you want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it. These are the steps that made our recovery possible. One, we admitted that we were powerless over our addiction and our lives had become unmanageable. Yes, and yes. So the first step that James and I worked was obviously the first step. Hopefully. I don't know. They do it differently in other places, but we like to start at one. More on that in a second. The whole purpose, the whole way that I have been able to take the steps, the literature that we have, and incorporate them in between the steps that I take is by the back section. Spiritual principles. It always comes right before moving on. What and how? What are the principles? How do we move forward? Right? In the first step, there are six. Honesty, open-mindedness, willingness, surrender, acceptance, and humility. Those are the things that we try to absorb in that step and move forward with. So, after working the first, my first step was a American literature accomplishment. This step was painstakingly written in 1.5 composition notebooks. There were whiteout blotches in it where I misspelled words, and there were entire sentences highlighted and cut off and scribbled over because I'm smart. And I need Mr. Do You Need a Ride to Court to see that. All he said was, after we got through that, he said, hey, I think you have somebody you need to be honest to. We'll start there. So, it is not easy being the only person in Narcotics Anonymous with herpes. It's been a lonely, lonely road. Don't laugh too hard, you'll give yourself away. I fell in love at 90 Days Clean. and she was the one. And on Easter Sunday, she had this dress on, and it was incredible. And we walked around the lake by my mom's house, and like she had this blanket and shit, laid it out in the field. And, you know, like we're doing our thing, like being, you know, what two star-crossed lovers usually do, like making out in the field. And she got on top of me, and it happened before I could have that talk. And she was adamant about it, and it just happened. My bad. I didn't say anything. So I worked my first step with my sponsor, and he said, you have someone you need to be honest to at 11 at night. So I got in my car, and of course, she lived in a recovery house. So I got in my car, and I drove there, and I gave it this big preamble, like, look, I just need you to know that I love you, right? And what I'm about to say doesn't necessarily change that. I just need you to know that I value you very much, and you're probably going to hit me, and bam, bam, bap, 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 and then I spit it out. And she said, thank you for your honesty. That must have been really hard to tell me. First of all, I was like, honesty? Whoa, does it still count as honesty when you cross that line? All right, you crossed the line. I didn't stop you. My hands are kind of dirty, but you were the freaky one. But I'm trying to be spiritually superior here and do the right thing because I'm on this path. I just worked my first step. Oh, that was the first thing I said. I just got done working my first step. You know how big that was. You remember when I read it to you? That's poetic. Cool. That was it. That was the first time I learned what practicing a principle in my affairs was. Was I going to use them when it counted? Was I going to tell the truth when it was uncomfortable? Was I going to be able to tell you who I was when I was absolutely certain that you were going to reject me on the other side of that? Was I ready to separate myself from the man or the boy that I was before I picked up a white key tag? If you want what we have and are willing to make the effort, that was the first time I put my money where my mouth was. And we stayed together. Second step. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So before we talk about that, we got to talk about what insanity is. There is a quote that is thrown around in our fellowship that does not give the due credit to its creator. Insanity is what? Repeating the... expecting different results, right? That is not our authors. That is Albert F. and Einstein that wrote that. Right? It's kind of cool. I don't know if he was one of us. Maybe. Insanity. Ready? Same girl. This is how we met. I was at a meeting. It was on the second floor of a building in Laurel, Maryland. And she walked up the steps. And I saw her coming up. I looked at her. I looked away. The low self-esteem had me look away. I looked back. She was still looking at me. Bam. I knew the name of our grandchildren before she got to the top of the staircase. She was the one. The one. So a relationship ensued. Obviously, Easter happened. And this is how I knew I was the one. I would text her, and while I was texting her, a text from her would come in, and then I would erase everything I was saying and say, oh, gee, that's so crazy, because I was just texting you, and you were thinking about me, and you texted me at the same moment. So it was just like kind of those things where, you know, when they talk about higher power, Narcotics Anonymous, and like the universe and shit, how it connects us, it's just like destiny and all these things. And she's like, Steve, you need to slow down. I had 90 days, she had 6 months. So she was the predecessor. She's like, you need to slow down. And I said, hold on.
Don't tell me that. Listen here, if I had never skipped school that day and drank that Steel Reserve when I was 10 years old behind the grocery store to get arrested, to go to Boys Village for the first time, to get on house arrest, to come back with the bracelet on, to cut it off, to get caught by the cops again, to go back in there and then go to the psych ward and then come out and then go there and go here and go there and then go buy that thing and get caught on the BW Parkway for that thing by the park police and go to a federal case and go there and do all those things and then meet James and have him offer me a ride to court and then accept it and then walk in there, walk up. She said, "Are you from Narcotics Anonymous?" He said, "Yes, ma'am." And then she walked to the front. She said, "Your Honor, I'd like to call United States of America versus Stephen Hall," and dismiss the entire thing and then walk out of there, to come here, to go to that meeting, to see you walk up the stairs, to look at you and absolutely immediately know the name of our grandchildren, then this wouldn't have happened. Don't tell me this isn't destiny. I've waited my entire life to meet you. Hope. That's the new one in step two. That's the new principle there. Hope. That there was something out there that knew more about love than I did. That there was something out there that could throw a wrench into the insanity in my head that said, the girl that you met at a meeting that had only a couple days more clean than you did was the one. That said, you were supposed to fuse your entire soul to another human being before you ever even got a chance to know who you are. There's hope there. And it happened. You know why? Because she relapsed and she's dead now. And that's how we broke up. Third step. Faith. Faith was this. Obviously, I had these grandiose ideas when I came in the door about how large I was. I was still pissed off that I hadn't become a ninja during the week and a rock star on the weekends. So I was planning to make up for lost time, starting with rapping in the Serenity Circle, and I was just getting started. I thought that I was the sickest addict in the world when I came through the door here. Because remember, all those boring people have been trying to carry a message to me my entire life. And you'd finally suckered me into coming to one of your cult gatherings in the community. When I heard you guys speak of God, I said, God, duh. I'm going to need God's. I'm going to need and the team of God Avengers to assemble to fix me, because that's how sick I am. I'm going to need Chuck Norris, Samuel L. Jackson, what was the guy from Kenny Rogers, any bearded guy that I ever saw in my life to come together and help me now. So my sponsor gave me the call to go over my third step. I expected there to be this ceremony involved, or he was going to send some smoke signals from the mountaintop, and I was going to arrive, and he was going to, like, spell out in the smoke, like, disrobe and look in the bush. I was going to take my clothes off, and there'd be a loincloth there. I was going to put this loincloth up and hike up the mountain, and he was going to anoint me with some kind of oil. And then I was going to sit down Indian style, and I was going to get up after we did whatever you guys do. And I was going to descend that mountain as an enlightened being. And that's what I expected. What happened was we went over it in the Panera Bread parking lot. But here's the thing. I was so obsessed with knowing who God was. I needed to know the answer. Who is this God that you speak of? Because when you say of your own understanding, I take that and I run with it. And I want to keep redefining it. And that's cool. But not at that point in my life. I found this painting at a stoplight when I was in the middle of work on my third step. And it was the shitty painting of a stack of records. It was, you know, just like a stack of vinyl records. So I got this painting and I hung it in my room. And I was an art collector now. Lost Trees Awakening. Wow, that's crazy. As I said that, I looked back and read that off of that banner at the same time. Whoa. And So I put this thing on my wall. Now the thing that was missing with this painting was there was no signature in any of the corners. You know, an artist, they pour their souls out on this canvas and then they sign it at the end. And there was no signature there. And in a moment, when I was reading my third step, and I was in the middle of writing it, and I was trying to figure out who the hell God was, I stopped. And I listened to that thing I referred to inside of me. And what I heard was, I mean, and I love this painting. I have no idea why. I never really understood visual art, but I love this thing so much. And what I heard was, Stephen, you do not need to know the identity of the Creator to appreciate the beauty that He created. Word. Well, that's just heavy. And it didn't come from me. I was sitting there trying to find the next one. And trying to, you know, trying to work a good third step so I could stand up and talk about how good it sounded. You know, that was it. That was the foundation that I worked here. Those are the things that brought me through the door here. Every single step that I've worked always calls back to those three. They are the foundation upon which I have been able to ride into this way of life that I never dreamed possible. Fourth step. Took the mask off. Told you I was from New York. Wrote about a whole bunch of things that I had done to other people so they could understand how much I hated me. My biggest fear was that you were going to find out what that thing said about me when I looked in the mirror and realized that it was right. My biggest fear. Fifth step. I told my sponsor those things. And he told me his version. And I said, you are sick. You need to be here. I'm just visiting. Sixth step. Becoming entirely ready. Yeah. I learned what it felt like to have the girl with One Day Clean come up to me after I got off the, you know, after I got done speaking. I had no idea what Narcotics Anonymous was. Come up to me and say, will you sponsor me? And I said, yes. Let's go to my house and read the basic text. And then cut her off. Because I had gotten what I needed from her and discarded her. To get the call 3 months later to go carry a message of hope into an H&I in the rehab and walk in there and see her on the couch. I became entirely ready to never feel that way again. Hard won experience. Where my most sincere prayers are answered by God saying things like, why don't you just use already? Instead of hurting other people, get it over with. When my God talks to me like that, I listen. End of the sixth step has the most gorgeous question in our literature, if you ask me. The sixth step was a death of a million razors, and I made it way harder than it had to be. Don't give me a license to kick my own ass. Don't give me a license to pick me apart. Don't do it, because I'll do it with a smile on my face and blood in my mouth. Also, don't ask me to say anything good about myself. Because my big vocabulary having ass all of a sudden doesn't have any words for you. End of the sixth step. What kind of son? After you've attained all the qualities that you're searching for, what kind of son? What kind of father, friend, brother, role model, member of your community will you become? And my answers were, because at this point I was sophisticated because I needed to make sure that my step work got published in case I ever died prematurely. I was typing on his computer, and this is what I typed. You ready, Drew? At this time, I've recently learned that projecting into the future with false hope has led me to replace it. And I take a deep breath, and that same thing that twitched inside of me in the middle of the third step came and twitched again. And I backed it all out. And I described a version of myself that I never thought in my wildest dreams I could become, ever. I was greedy. I asked for way more than I deserved. And fast forward 5 years later, I brought one of my guys to the sixth step. And something told me to bring mine along so that I could refer to what I had written.
And we got to that question, I read my list. And every single thing that I wrote had become my life. Every single piece of it. Seventh step. Here comes the hope. Here comes the relief. Here comes the healing. Here comes the moment after the smoke of the sixth step clears, and I see what God still wants me to be under that. I see the worth and value that I possess. I see the things that I've given for other people. I've seen the selflessness that I've exhibited here. And I've learned to understand that I deserve the same kind of love that I've been trying to give you my whole life. And I stopped trying to turn the volume down on my own defects. It doesn't say we became entirely ready to learn how to hold our breath and white knuckle this shit until it goes away. We humbly ask God to remove these shortcomings. Please take this. I can't handle it. I've been clean too long. I started to think I had good ideas again. I started to get acquainted with something called discipline. I don't know shit about discipline. Most of us either control is impossible the moment it is suggested. I know about staying clean till midnight. I've done it a couple thousand times in a row now. Eighth step, made a list. All people we had harmed. I went back to my fourth step. I looked at all those things I didn't want to tell my sponsor, and I put every single one of them on there. Ninth step. I said this earlier. The most important thing I learned in my ninth step was how to plant my heel and turn on it after I said what I needed to say. I tried to work a ninth step with 30 days clean. I got my orange key tag. I started going on tour in the neighborhood with the orange key tag and a basic text like a Bible salesman. And I started knocking on the doors. And they would peek out the window and they would come out. And I would say, hey, you see this? Look at the back. Yep, gold lettering. That's right. Clean the terrain for 30 days. And most of them would say, we're really happy for you, Steve. Good job. Like, sincerely. And some of them called the police, but I still couldn't sleep any better. I didn't understand what the ninth step was really about until I worked it with a sponsor that I had developed a relationship with after I had acquired the principles from the first eight steps. Restitution. Resolution and restoration. Those are the three R's in a ninth step. And after I learned how to give those things, I learned about something called the ability to forgive myself. The ability to separate the things that I had done from the person that I am. And to separate those behaviors. And good deed by good deed, I gave my disease a reason to go back in the basement where it belonged. And you want to know about all the good things I did in the ninth step? You want to know about some of the good stuff I did? All the selflessness? Guess what? One time I did, you don't get to know. Because I did them for me. And the moment I tell you about them, I've just attached a string to it. I get to enjoy those for the rest of my life. Because those were the things I did when no one was looking. When it was just me and God, and whatever the hell that voice that showed up in the driveway when I was 6 years old was made out of. What if you're not as lovable as you thought you were? What if I am? What if I am? Why not me? Tenth step. Tenth step was a game changer, and it frequently disrupts members of society that aren't in this fellowship. Because I'll lose my temper, and I'll get into these arguments or something, and I'll raise my voice, and then I'll say something like, look, Robbie, I don't like how you did that shit, man. You really effed that up. Come on, man. Hey, look, Robbie, what I just said to you was completely wrong, and I apologize. I shouldn't have said it to you that way. He valued you as a human being. And people don't understand. They're like, all right, it's like them Talladega Nights. It's like, all right, I'm going to keep yelling because I don't understand what's going on right now, but I forgive you. today? And if I did, how do I repair it? And how do I do my best to not do it again tomorrow? And all I got to do is start back at one. Because everything I needed to know to work a proper 10th step happened in the 9 before it. Here we go. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. I got a beef with that. His will? I thought we could define God. So God's a man? Come on now. Just saying. What if I wanted my God to be Sinead O'Connor? Sigourney Weaver. She kicked the shit out of Alien 3 movies in a row. I'm still on my shit, you know what I mean? Like Chuck Norris, Sigourney. Chuck Norris couldn't kill those aliens. She was an awesome, awesome person. Don't get me abstract, start picking shit apart. Prayer and meditation. This is what it is. And it works out why it talks about God's will for us is to learn to be content with or without a partner. With or without this. With or without that. When at the end of the road we find that we can no longer function as a human being either with or without her. It. Them. Those. What is there left to do? God's will for me and my will for me. The goal is to get them all pointed at love. The goal that I'm shooting for is to make sure that my will for me and God's will for me are absolutely indistinguishable. I want those two things to be exactly the same. I haven't even gotten close. My 11th step pulled me back to recovery. 12th step is simple. It means that I do this. It means that when I see a guy in Pratt and Monroe in Baltimore City, the belly of the beast, when I see him with a 30-day key tag on his waist, I pull my car over and I hug him. It means that I practice these principles in all my affairs. It means that I give freely what was given to me. It means that the next time I hear a kid raise his hand and say he's going to prison for a long time tomorrow, that I ask him where court is and I pick him up. That's what that means. And as a result, I become so much more free. I got married this year. It's tough. It's real tough. I met her in Miami. I moved her 1,000 miles away. I put a ring on her finger and introduced her to my daughter overnight. My sponsor keeps talking about this thing called impulse control. I have no idea what he's talking about. She's beautiful. She loves me in a way that I have never been loved. She possesses so many things that I can't wait to see develop and progress, but it's tough. You don't put somebody in that kind of position and expect them to thrive without any tools. She's not one of us. I'm not gonna say she's a normie, that's not my wife. She's just not this, she's something. But she talks about weird things. Like when I went down to pack her stuff up, move up, I came back from the trash and she's like, babe, I found some leftover cocaine in the cabinet. What is this mystical substance that you speak of? Like, what the hell is leftover cocaine? She said, I was partying like 6 months ago, and I had enough, so I put it in the cabinet, and I forgot about it. Really? This is going to be an interesting and awesome ride. I wish she could be here. Truth be told, I needed to come up here with my friends and I needed to pour into my spirit because I've poured so much into trying to make this work that I have lost my ability to give it anything else. Because when I pour into anything else and I refrain from pouring into me, I become good to no one. And I'm afraid. I am afraid. I am afraid that this whole thing is just this manifestation of infatuation or this deep-seated self-hatred. Because of that voice that I heard when I was 6 years old pulling off in the driveway and constantly trying to stand on the razor blade between what if I'm not as lovable as I thought I was and what if I am. More will be revealed. If you're new here, welcome home. Please stay. You helped me so much. When I come here and I see you struggle and stay clean through it, I remember. I'm reminded of the thing that I bet my life on. I'm reminded of the thing that taught me how to gradually answer the question of who I am. It's a crusade. I laugh here all the time. If you're not laughing in this process, you're doing something wrong. Live and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Smile at something. Your disease is afraid of it. I couldn't leave here without telling you where I am right now. I'm about to wrap it up, but I want to say this, man. Anything that you're struggling with, you put the steps on it, you will see it break down. A year and a half ago, I weighed 300 pounds. I'm a musician. I went to perform in London. And I'm a Game of Thrones nerd, so we rented a car and went around the countryside. And I'm hiking through all these castles. And I got, like, to the second story of what they call a spire, because I'm an expert now. That's the fancy name for a tower in the corner of a castle. And I got to the second floor, and this elderly British woman walked by, and she was like, "Are you all right? You need an ambulance." No, Gertrude. But my friend came up to me and he was like, he's not in the program. He came up to me because I was like all winded, wondering what the number for 911 is in England. And he's like, "Why don't you stop feeling sorry for yourself and do something about this?" Okay. Came home, I bought some Nike Flyknits. And I started running. And I couldn't run 20 seconds when I started. And 10 weeks later, I banged a 5K in 21 minutes. The pain got great enough. When it came to food, most of us saw that control was impossible the moment it was suggested. When we were beaten, we became willing. When at the end of the road, we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without two family-sized boxes of Reese's Puffs at 3 o'clock in the morning. We all face the same dilemma. I just made it to midnight without doing that shit to me. And I made sure that I clocked some kind of running. It didn't matter how fast I ran. It didn't matter how far I ran. Just as long as I put those shoes on. And I got out there. And I was so embarrassed at how big I was that I would wait till 1 in the morning. And I would go to the tennis court across the street from my mom's house when there was a perfectly good lake. I would go to the tennis court because there were no lights in it. And I would just circle around it thousands of times. Until I turned and transformed into the sex god that you see before you today. But to me, that is the proof. I don't have a drug problem. I have a problem with not believing in myself and believing that voice that I heard for the first time in the driveway when I was 6 years old. The steps are your way up and out of everything that has ever caused you pain. Find someone that wants to help you, believes in you, and most of all, wants to help you in your recovery. Find someone that believes in you. This will get better than you can ever imagine. Please, if you've been here for one day, or if you've been here for 30 years, please remember that we are all just getting started. Thank you so much.